A 9-pound socket wrench slips from a technician's hand. It tumbles 70 feet down a missile silo, punctures a fuel tank, and sets in motion events that could have detonated a nuclear warhead 3 times more powerful than every bomb dropped in World War II on American soil. This isn't a Hollywood thriller. It happened in Damascus, Arkansas, on September 18, 1980, and most Americans have never heard about it. What followed wasn't just an industrial accident, but a terrifying glimpse into the fragile systems controlling weapons capable of ending civilization. The Damascus incident exposed a disturbing truth. The arsenal built to protect us has repeatedly come within a hair's breadth of destroying us. Nuclear weapons face an unsolvable paradox. They must always detonate when authorized, yet never explode accidentally, the always-never dilemma. Early American bombs were shockingly primitive. One machinist wrapped aluminum tubing around a Coke bottle during construction. Assembly required 36 men and 2 weeks. Batteries died constantly. Plutonium cores would melt explosive lenses if left assembled too long. As Cold War tensions escalated, readiness trumped safety. General Curtis LeMay, commanding Strategic Air Command, dismissed crash concerns by declaring aircraft wouldn't dare fail. His training was harder than war, creating a culture where mistakes weren't just unacceptable, they were career-ending. The unofficial SAC motto, "To err is human, to forgive is not SAC policy." When nuclear bombs began flying on airborne alert missions in 1958, an Air Force survey reached a chilling conclusion. Nuclear safety was non-existent. Yet SAC considered safety devices operationally unsuitable because they would slow response times. Speed mattered more than survival. In January 1961, a B-52 broke apart over Goldsboro, North Carolina, dropping 2 Mark 39 hydrogen bombs. One bomb's arming mechanisms activated during its fall. Only a single low-voltage switch, the kind you'd find in a household appliance, prevented a 4-megaton detonation that would have spread deadly radioactive fallout across Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York City. The fate of the Eastern Seaboard hung on a switch no more sophisticated than what controls your bedroom lamp. These weren't isolated incidents. Weapons fell from aircraft, were lost at sea, and survived crashes by sheer luck. Each revealed the same pattern: complex systems, human error, and frighteningly narrow margins between routine operations and catastrophe. The technology designed to end wars nearly started one repeatedly, not through enemy action, but through the inherent instability of managing such powerful weapons. While mechanical failures posed significant risks, the human element created equally dangerous scenarios. Approximately 20,000 Air Force personnel worked with nuclear weapons during the Cold War without psychiatric screening. Statistical analysis suggested 10 to 20 workers could be expected to have severe mental breakdowns yearly. One documented case involved a paranoid schizophrenic captain who continued flying bombers with unimpaired proficiency. His technical skills remained intact, even as his judgment with civilization-ending weapons was potentially compromised. By the late 1970s, military readiness had declined precipitously. Half of the Air Force's F-15 fighters were grounded due to maintenance issues. Strategic Air Command had lost more than half its personnel since 1961, and illegal drug use soared to about 27% of military personnel. Command systems proved equally vulnerable. In November 1979, a technician at NORAD accidentally inserted a training tape into a computer, generating false warnings of a massive Soviet attack. More alarming, on June 3, 1980, a defective 46-cent computer chip convinced National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski that 220 Soviet missiles were inbound. He prepared to wake President Carter and recommend retaliation before learning satellites detected nothing. A component costing less than a dollar nearly triggered nuclear war. America's nuclear strategy underwent dramatic transformations, each raising the stakes. After World War II, military leaders like General Spaatz advocated for world government, while even anti-communist General Groves argued atomic bombs should make war unthinkable. These idealistic visions evaporated as Cold War tensions emerged. By 1948, the Joint Chiefs approved Half Moon, the first emergency war plan targeting 70 Soviet cities with 133 atomic bombs. President Truman initially rejected this nation-killing concept, but later accepted it during the Berlin blockade. This evolved into massive retaliation under Eisenhower. By 1960, the Pentagon created the Single Integrated Operational Plan, America's first comprehensive nuclear war plan targeting 3,729 sites with 3,423 nuclear weapons. Conservative estimates projected 220 million deaths within 3 days. When briefed, President Kennedy's science advisor expressed concern about unnecessary and undesirable overkill that could kill 4 and 5 times over somebody who is already dead. Yet once launched, the PSYOP couldn't be altered, slowed, or stopped, a doomsday machine with no off switch. The Titan II missile stood 103 feet tall, carrying a 9-megaton warhead fueled by hypergolic propellants that ignited on contact. On September 18, 1980, senior airman David Powell and trainee Jeffrey Plum entered Launch Complex 374-7 for routine maintenance. Powell used a ratchet instead of the required torque wrench, a common shortcut. When his socket slipped, it plummeted 70 feet and punctured the missile's side. Fuel began spraying like water from a garden hose. Water sprays meant to dilute the fuel created heat, raising oxidizer tank pressure dangerously. Strategic Air Command headquarters ordered complete evacuation but refused to open the silo door, prioritizing containment above all else. PTS Team B was dispatched to stabilize the missile. Vapor detection equipment revealed concentrations climbing from 65 parts per million to 21,000 ppm, levels high enough to degrade their protective suits. Despite safety advisors recommending withdrawal, SAC headquarters ordered them to continue. Airman David Livingston made the fateful decision to return and switch on a ventilation fan. Moments later, the Titan II exploded, launching the 9-megaton warhead 200 yards away and killing Livingston. Miraculously, the warhead didn't detonate. The Damascus accident exemplifies what sociologist Charles Perrow called a normal accident, triggered by trivial events in tightly coupled systems where multiple processes interact unpredictably. The system's complexity meant officers couldn't determine what was happening inside the silo, leading to ignored warnings and crucial decisions made by distant commanders lacking firsthand knowledge. Since 1945, approximately 70,000 nuclear weapons have been built without a single accidental or unauthorized detonation, a 99.99857% success rate. Yet with weapons of mass destruction, even this impressive record falls short. Nuclear weapons demand 100% control, a standard human imperfection makes nearly impossible to maintain indefinitely. Today's greatest nuclear war risk lies in South Asia, where Pakistan and India, neighbors with bitter disputes and missile flight times of 4 to 5 minutes, lack hardened command facilities or reliable early warning systems. Pakistan has doubled its arsenal since 2006, developing battlefield nuclear weapons that blur the line between conventional and nuclear warfare. Launch Complex 374-7 was never rebuilt. Nature has reclaimed the site, with scattered concrete and heat-deformed metal marking where the missile once stood. As nuclear arsenals age and cyber vulnerabilities multiply, we continue holding what one retired SAC general called an angry tiger by the tail. The Damascus incident reminds us that survival depends not on perfect systems, those don't exist, but on acknowledging our vulnerability and learning from near misses before our luck runs out.